Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Later in the show, we'll be joined by Virginia head coach Tony Bennett. I want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on Apple Podcasts. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also send me your questions on Twitter. I'll get to them later in this podcast. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And today's episode of the College Hoops Day podcast is sponsored by Geico. Everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding to-do you do today. Now that we've got you set for all your Geico needs, there was some big news that came down on Monday morning, and we're going to talk about, you know, what I saw on the road last week and different teams in a couple of minutes. But it's important right now to address a couple of off-the-court issues. And the first was the news on Monday morning that California has passed a bill that in time, players are going to be able to benefit monetarily from their name, image, and likeness. And this sets up an unbelievable twist of the history of amateurism in collegiate athletics. And it is believed from what I have read right now, just now, just stepping into the studio, that this will come into play in 2023. And it now has put the NCAA on the clock to respond, because we are now entering uncharted territory. Because if this goes through, as it, you know, we all expect it will in 2023, people and players who are playing Division I sports and college sports in the state of California will be able to benefit and make money. That is a major disadvantage for other programs and other schools and other universities who are in the similar leagues as the teams that are in California, because it creates an unbelievable advantage and a selling point for those schools in California. This is a topic that is not going away. This is a topic that is going to continue to shift. I have mixed emotions about this entire process. I understand that people feel that by paying players and compensating players, there's going to be a lot of other things that could be swept under the table. But last week when I was in Syracuse, I was visiting with Jim Boeheim, and he made an unbelievable point about paying players and what would happen. And it's important to point out that players now do get cost of attendance. They do get their education paid for. They do get meals paid for. I get it's a difference in that versus benefiting off your name, image, and likeness. But Jim Boeheim made a good point. He said, you can't pay a quarterback and a running back the same you're going to pay an offensive lineman, because their marketing opportunities are not going to be similar. So if the quarterback and the running back are getting paid, will the offensive lineman say, well, I'm not going to block for those guys? There's a lot of different dynamics in this situation. Some other news that came down last week, obviously a fallout from the FBI probe. Kansas was served with a notice of allegations from the NCAA. I want to point out right now, this is not news. Why is it not news? It is not news because there are no penalties assessed to Kansas yet. Kansas is going to have 90 days to respond. It then will have a knockdown, drag-out fight with the NCAA, and eventually in time, we will have a scenario where we find out what the penalties are for Kansas. Now, one thing to keep in mind, it does seem like the NCAA is setting a new precedent with the severity of the penalties that it's handing out. Georgia Tech last week got a postseason ban for something that an assistant coach did who is no longer a member of the program that wasn't on the up and up. penalties are going to come for the majority of all the teams that were involved in the FBI probe. Suspensions are going to come for the head coaches involved in the programs that were in the FBI probe. But it's important to remember this. It is not the NCAA's position to fire or terminate these coaches. And it's important to remember this, too, because everybody's going to want to talk and speculate on all of these different topics time and time again. Never speculate on speculation. What did I see on the road last week? Syracuse, who I saw over the summer, is very high on freshman combo guard Bryson Gadeen. Jim Boeheim told me he's gained 15 pounds since the summer. This is the best long-term prospect at Syracuse for a team that I think is sneaky good in the ACC. Went to Ann Arbor, visited with Juwan Howard at Michigan. Michigan, internally, in terms of their staff, feels that they have four outstanding players. Xavier Simpson, Isaiah Livers, John Teske, all guys who played last year. And then they're going to add Franz Wagner, the brother of former Michigan star Mo Wagner. I don't see a lot of proven shooting in that core. I would expect Michigan's opponents to play them with a lot of zone early. I also obviously spent time at Michigan State with Tom Izzo. Michigan State has four all Big Ten players in the starting lineup. Cassius Winston, Josh Langford, Aaron Henry, and Xavier Tillman. The wild card right now in that program is the four spot. Marcus Bingham, who looks physically like Jaren Jackson, to me has the inside track on that. I also think two freshmen, Malik Hall, Julius Marble, will push for minutes inside in what will be the number one team consensusly in college basketball. Flew from Michigan to Arizona. Arizona, to me, is back in a major way nationally if the Wildcats can get reliability from a fourth perimeter player. Nico Mannion, the talented freshman point guard, is the gas in the engine. He can run a team. UC Irvine transfer Max Hazard is locked and loaded as a three-point gunner, made 93 threes last season. And Josh Green is an all-world athlete. But Arizona needs a fourth guard, either Kentucky transfer Jamal Baker to get a waiver from the NCAA, or Devonair Dutrieve, the talented sophomore who was great in the red-blue scrimmage on Friday night, to take a major step forward. Also saw Arizona State. To me, this is a postseason team. I don't know which postseason yet. Arizona State has great team speed. Jalen House, a talented freshman guard, the son of former NBA guard and Arizona State guard Eddie House, was sensational in the practice. Still need to see, though, if the talent base for Arizona State can blossom. Don't know if the talent base is as good as it was a year ago. The talent base for Virginia won't be as good as it was a year ago, but the Cavaliers gave us one of the great bounce-back stories in all of sports. What lies ahead for Virginia in 1920? Tony Bennett joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein coming up next. Virginia had one of the more unbelievable 12-month turnarounds in the history of sports last spring. Cavaliers won a national championship in dramatic fashion, and the head coach of Virginia is Tony Bennett. He joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. And, Coach, we had to talk a couple of years ago about your passion for hip-hop, and one of the favorite songs that you referenced was The World's Greatest by R. Kelly. Did you feel like the world's greatest after you beat Texas Tech and won a national championship?
No, I didn't. I felt just blessed and fortunate I wasn't that, but I love that song. And, you know, That's I always tell our guys, it's the pursuit of a championship and the joy of competition. That's like the fun part of it. And then, you know, that moment you win it and you're like, wow, I just, you know, you're kind of standing on top of that hill of a season that's a grind. And, you know, the way we exited the year before, it was a gratifying feeling, though, nonetheless.
What's the biggest way your life has changed since winning a national championship?
It probably hasn't that much, to be honest. You know, the only thing is maybe more when you go on vacation, you're probably a little more noticeable. I think you were on TV a little more, so the exposure of that, people might recognize you, you know, in spots where you wouldn't think they would. But otherwise, honestly, it's not. Just, you know, now we had a really special banner and ring ceremony a couple weeks ago, and you walk in and you see that banner, and it's just that part, you certainly turn the page, but you never tear that page out of the book. It'll always be there forever. So when you see that, it brings you a joy, and you know that you'll have that as a basketball experience forever. So that part was pretty gratifying, and probably the being noticeable a little more. You can't walk around unseen as much. So I don't like that as much, but we'll live with it for what happened.
You know, Tony, you said a year ago after you dealt with the UMBC loss that going through that defeat taught you that you want to win a national championship as much as anybody, but if you don't accomplish that, your life's going to be okay. Now that you have won it, do you personally feel any different as a person?
Not at all. I think, you know, they both were powerful experiences in, I think, drawing me to what I know matters most, but still enjoying, you know, the vocation that I do. And I think I've heard someone say where I can't remember who you treat winning and losing as imposters, and just be about, you know, being as good as you can as a coach and knowing where your worth is. And again, coaching is what you do, and it's a blast, and it's also hard, but it's that saying, it's not your identity completely. It's part of it, but it's not who you are. And whether you're winning at the highest level or losing at the lowest level, it's not, it can't define you. And I think you realize that, because as bad as that felt after we lost and how down you were and humbling and all that stuff, you still, time did heal it to an extent. You still loved the game. You still enjoyed life. And, you know, life went on and you had motivation. And it's the same. The converse of that is after you win it, you feel great. You do. And then time goes on and you're still like, oh, we still got some battles. I still have my bad days here and there. And it's just kind of the great reality of things that I think are, you know, pretty, I guess, momentary or worldly.
Virginia head coach Tony Bennett joined the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Now, in your first NCAA tournament game, you trailed Gardner-Webb in the first half, 28-14. When you were in that position, did UMBC cross your mind?
Oh, of course. I mean, I don't know. It wasn't UMBC. It was just like, yeah, I guess it was just here we are again. And it was hard because Gardner-Webb, that's the beauty of the NCAA tournament is, you know, there's not a ton of separation and teams get hot. And you can be susceptible, and to have experienced what we did and to feel, you can just feel it, the atmosphere, the crowd, everything. And, you know, we had all year taken it head on and addressed, you know, look, this is what had happened. We played to a number one seed, had a great year. And I think we handled it the right way. And then all of a sudden you get to the tournament and, you know, have it be so dramatic and to say, oh man, what's going on? It was a pressure unlike anything I felt, or I'm certain no team in college basketball could have experienced that. But John, I think because of the way our guys respond to that, one, they'll have that lesson in their life forever. But I think that pressure and that resilience and kind of going through that, I think that prepared us for the run in the tournament, because at no point did we ever touch anything that felt like that. Were there times when it was tense and, of course, you were down, or, you know, late game plays? Of course, we all saw that. But I think that prepared us for the moment to face the games when it was tight and we had a win to advance and, you know, some amazing stuff happened. So that was a unique experience that, in a way, propelled it. But it wasn't the way I would have chosen, just like the UMBC wasn't. But for whatever reason, it certainly all worked out.
And you beat Oklahoma and Oregon after Gardner-Webb in two great wins. And then you had an epic triumph over Purdue in the Elite Eight in a game that had a little bit of everything. I'm curious, win or lose, where did the Purdue game rank among the best that you've ever been a part of as a player or a coach?
Well, I think the Oregon game was a lot tighter than people realize. But that Purdue game, I said a few years ago we played Michigan State in the Sweet 16 at Madison Square Garden, and that was a heavyweight fight. That was one of the better games as a coach and a player I had been a part of. It was unbelievable. I think this Purdue game was the best game as a player, a coach, or an assistant maybe that I've ever been a part of, as far as a high-level elite game for what was at stake to get to the Final Four, but not just how it ended. I mean, from start to finish, Carson Edwards put on, you know, the game of games, but our guys answer. We did it with, you know, Ty, Kyle, you know, with Momedy, with the play, obviously, with Kihei and DeAndre, all those guys, Jack Salt. It was such a high-level offensive game and defensive game. It might not have been a, you know, it was motion offense. There was a lot of moving and screening. There was some transition, but not much. But I just think it was one of the best I've ever seen. And again, the dramatics at the end just added to it. So that was probably the best one ever.
Now, the dramatics at the end were unbelievable, and that's how close Matt Painter was to a Final Four. As excited as you were to get Virginia to the Final Four, you were in the spot he was in 3 years earlier against Syracuse. As a human being, as excited as you were to get over the hump, to get Virginia to the Final Four, what was it like going down and shaking the hand of a man that was going through what you went through in 2016?
No, I can remember when Coach Boeheim said to me, "You're going to get another chance. It will happen." And at that moment, it seemed hollow. I was like, you just don't know when you're going to come down that road again. And did I just lose my last chance, professionally speaking, to you know, be a head coach and lead a team to a Final Four? Because in our profession, you know, the Final Four, it's such a big thing. And probably unduly, but it's just the way our, you know, the media and all of us have looked at the NCAA tournament. You know, even though it's a little about matchups, health, you know, some things go into it. So that feeling was pretty gutting. And I remember, yeah, with Matt, because I think he's one of the best coaches in the game. I think he's one of the funniest and finest people I know. I love Matt. And we go back a ways. And so I felt compassion for him. I did. And just to show you who he is, he called me later that night. Maybe he sent the text. It was unbelievable what he shared and what he said in his kind of pain in the basketball deal. And so it's a strange feeling because you can't wait to be excited and all that, but you do if you like someone like that and you've been in that spot, you certainly feel compassion.
Well, and you brought up something that's interesting. You talked about being in the Elite Eight, and you know, I've been covering the sport for a long time. Coaches always say that is the game where you feel the most pressure. You've been in that game right now twice in the last four seasons. Did you feel differently coaching in the Elite Eight versus other games that you've coached in your career?
Well, you tell those coaches that, and I'm the only one in the history of the game, if you lose as a one seed to a 16 seed, that's more pressure than the Elite Eight game. So that's a different kind of animal, especially when you're down 14 and the second time you're experiencing that. That's a different – and that's funny. I've talked to so many coaches that have – that 116 game, it's a tricky one. It really is, and it's getting harder, you know, and it's so much about matchups. But it's definitely one of the most pressure-filled games in a way because you're so close to what, again, in our coaching profession, you know, a lot of us deem as everything. Man, to touch that Final Four. And then when you get to the Final Four, I think if you've never been to a Final Four, that's kind of it. But once you go through to the Final Four and you have a chance at a national championship, you're like – this is you feel even it's another kind of level of, I guess, want, so to speak. But yeah, as I said, you don't know if you're going to journey down that road. There's no guarantees the way the tournament goes and how the, you know, the luck of the draw or however you want to call it plays out. So it's up there for certainly, you know, a tense, pressure filled moment.
Well, tense, pressure-filled moments is what the world was feeling when you were in the Final Four against Auburn and Texas Tech, two games that came down to the final possession, and your team executed until the final buzzer in each of those victories. After you beat Texas Tech and the final seconds were coming off the clock, I looked at you, and you just had your head in your hands. What were you saying to yourself at that particular moment?
Well, it's I remember when the clock hit zero, horn went off, I literally bowed my head. And I just said, thank you, Lord. I'm humbled. I don't deserve this. It was just a, like you said, you start it with the world's greatest. I didn't feel that way. I felt like I don't deserve this. This is humbling. And ironically, it was almost when we lost to UMBC, it was the same thing. I was like, I'm humbled. I don't deserve this. But it felt a whole lot different when it was the UMBC loss. So it was the same idea. You talk about humbled in two different ways. And feeling undeserving, like you didn't want it to happen back then. But when that championship buzzer went off, it really was, I can't believe what I just experienced. I mean, the whole story from, I think, what added to it was the year before and the way the games played out. And our guys, not to take anything away from our guys, of course you need, you know, good fortune. Our guys played. I mean, they made clutch shots and produced and played at an elite level, Purdue game all the way through. that's what it takes unless you're just dominant. You know, I think Villanova the year before was pretty dominant in theirs. Ours wasn't that way, but it was. I felt humbled and undeserving. I guess that's the only way I can say it.
Now, you go through that once, and for a lot of people, they say, you know, all you think about is winning another one. How much, since beating Texas Tech, has Tony Bennett thought about trying to win a second national championship?
Well, professionally speaking, you know, once you taste it, of course, let's do it again. Let's try to do it again. And I know that that's a challenge, you know, because of our success, because of how good of the players that we had for them, fortunately, and for us, fortunately, and what will make it harder is three of our, you know, players left early in DeAndre Hunter and Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy. And, you know, we would have had a heck of a team coming back, but the way the landscape of it, when guys play at that level and have, you know, I guess marketability or their stock is high, I'm so happy that they're getting this chance to do it. So I think we know we're going to have to start over is not the right word, but with a lot different kind of team as far as an experience. But we'll build it up again, and I don't think you get stuck in the end result. You know, you talk to coaches who do it. You just lock into the process. You get as good as you can. You pour in, and as you build your team, you'll find out. As we like to say, it was a letter that the old coach, Claire B., sent to Bobby Knight after he lost a tough game. He's like, you know, my hope is that you'll run to the starting line. And you don't worry about, you know, the next year we got to either get back if you had a significant loss or if you had a great victory. Oh, I can't wait to get back to that spot and do it again. Okay, you can dream of that, but it's all about running to the starting line. And, you know, you just pour it in. And that's where we're at because we've got a different kind of team this year. But would I love to go to another Final Four and win a championship? Who wouldn't? Of course, it'll drive me a lot, but it won't define me, and that's the thing I learned through both sides of winning and losing.
Virginia head coach Tony Bennett joined the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Well, you mentioned obviously running to the starting line, and you mentioned all the pieces you lost on your perimeter. Your early impressions for 19-20 from what you've seen so far, and who offensively is going to help replace all that you did lose on the perimeter?
I mean, that will be a work in progress. I think, you know, they always say in college basketball, you win with your guards. And I think our experience is coming back in our front court with Momedy and with, you know, Jay Huff, who got some experience, not much, and Braxton Key. Those are our three experienced guys. And then we have, you know, our second year returning in Kihei Clark, who was, you know, just he was so good at setting up all those guys. So the rest of the guys are all either brand new or didn't play at all. So it's so unproven, and I think the competition will reveal who can step up. We have, you know, a real solid recruiting class coming in, so we're going to need some help from those guys. We're going to have like Cody Statman, who is from Australia, is in his second year. He'll have an opportunity. We brought in a first time ever a junior college player, and then an incoming first year in Casey Morcell. So, you know, our perimeter is pretty thin. They're good players, but they haven't had the experience, and that's kind of what will define it. And then hopefully we'll rely on some of the experience of our veteran players to improve and be as good as we can. And that is right now the question at hand is, you know, how will our inexperience play out defensively and, of course, offensively for what we lost?
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring up veteran players. The guy that was part of the core last year that is back is Mamadi Diakite. Now, everybody obviously, you know, remembers him from the shot he made against Purdue, but now that some of the other pieces, the guys, the Jeromes, the Hunters, aren't there, what could happen for him as maybe more of a focal point this year?
Yeah, I think this is a natural progression, and sometimes, you know, I think the way we try to build our program is through experienced players. And certainly Mamadi will have to, you know, have more opportunities. You still have to stay true to yourself as a player. He's so gifted as a, you know, a defender, a rebounder, a run the floor type, and, you know, his shot is improved. So he's going to have to do more for us, which I think is exciting for him and challenging, but he also has to remember what his great strengths are and stay true to those, but be stretched more in other areas. So I'm excited for Momedy for sure and all those guys because now they're stepping into a role that will be challenging, but you know, a bigger role that perhaps was last year. And I think last year's run in the tournament, the unsung heroes were Momedy and Kihei early on. They really played very solid basketball in the first three games of that tournament, and Jack Salt gave us a huge lift, and Braxton did in different games in the tournament. So even Jay did. But I think Momedy and Kihei were pretty steady from start to finish in the NCAA tournament.
Well, and the thing is, your guys probably have to be ready earlier than past years because the ACC is going to a 20-game schedule, and you start the season at the Carrier Dome against Syracuse. What types of feelings do you have right now, not just about opening against Syracuse, but playing 20 league games?
Yeah, you know, it's we were kind of joking around. I think the schedule is set. We're like the first team that won a championship in a ton of years that has to start on the road, but that with part of the ACC network, I think they wanted some inventory and they wanted to launch the ACC network from a basketball standpoint with a conference game. I'd say, hey, if we were really experienced and maybe it was at home, I'd be like, I like this. Now we're not real experienced and we're in the Carrier Dome. I'm not sure I like it as much because I know the challenges. So that'll be interesting. We had one of our best games, I think, I've been a part of last year there, the way we played. But this idea of going to 20 games, I don't know. I think it's obviously two more quality games. You have to balance your schedule. It depends what your team can handle. And I know the reason behind it. It's certainly, you know, the hope is it helps more teams either, you know, get in the conference, the NCAA tournament. And we'll just see. I liked it when it was 16. It went to 18, and I'm like, okay, it's been okay. 20, we'll have to wait and see. I believe the Big Ten has done it, right? I don't know who else has done that. But it'll be a great challenge with the ACC Big Ten challenge. You play in these tournaments. Your schedule is pretty full for sure.
No, it definitely is. But your perspective, because of the last 2 years, I'm sure, is much deeper and much broader. And now that you've endured everything that you've endured, I'm curious – when you talk to people, how much more rewarding are you going to tell them is the process of becoming what you're supposed to become versus the moment of getting where you dream to go?
100% right, John. That's a great insight. Because I referred to what happened as a painful gift, and it was painful kind of being humbled like that. And we had a great year. Everybody kind of forgets that, and then we get beat. But then kind of going through that process, it really draws you into what matters. You know, basketball-wise, it refines you. It makes you think, all right, how can I be a better coach? How can I influence our team? Or how can I have a better relationship with these young men that we're going to have to go through tough stuff with, you know, and what matters to me? You know, my relationship with my family, my faith, those things get brought. You see things differently but better and clearer through that. And so that process does that. That's the way. And I don't think there's any other way. There's no shortcut to that. And so that's when we think of all of our memories in life, that's how we're formed and shaped. So I think from at least a basketball standpoint, I got a pretty good story to share that with others and encourage them, hopefully, when things aren't going as well as they are, or even if they are, to stay true to what matters.
Final thing, Tony, you know, basketball seasons in a lot of ways are like sequels, and you and I are both, you know, passionate fans of the Rocky series. The one time I felt in the series that Rocky really felt mortal was the first hour of Rocky III before he obviously lost to Mr. T, who was Clubber Lang in the movie, and you could just tell he was comfortable, he was fat, he was reading his own press clippings. How do you and the Virginia program now, as you prepare for another season, do everything you can so your body language and your affect is not synonymous with Stallone in the first hour of Rocky III?
I love it. Did you see Coach Leach's, Mike Leach's comments after the Washington State football game?
Yeah, I saw that on the wire, yeah.
Kind of what you're referring to, I'm sure it was, you know, I'm sure it was taken. I just saw the clip of it. But, you know, my father used to always share a proverb with our team when he was after, you know, something happened. And it says this: the furnace tests gold, meaning they'd heat up gold in the old days to see if there was any impurities in it. The crucible tests silver. I guess crucible is like a hammer. They used to pound on silver to see how good it was. But it goes on to say, but man is tested by the praise he receives. And, you know, when you get knocked on your can, you just kind of get back to work and you go after it. But when all of a sudden you get put on the pedestal, you have great success, it is like the first hour of Rocky III, as you mentioned. It's easy to lose your way. And that's our job. Now, because we're so new and it's a different team, I mean, if I had my whole team coming back, I think the reality of that would be, you know, the challenge. But we know our plate is full. And again, we're just trying to get to that starting line and work and not be affected by it. Because it's pretty much a different team. And then the guys that are returning, I think they got bigger roles, so they'll know they'll have to be ready. So I think that's the best way, is just to stay, as everyone says, so humble but so hungry, and competition sort of kind of refines you, as we said.
Well, Tony, we appreciate a couple minutes. It was a great story to cover last year and all the years since you've been at Virginia. Looking forward to another great season and look forward to staying connected along the way. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, John.
We'd like to thank Virginia head coach Tony Bennett for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein on Apple Podcasts. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And now, time now for our social media portion of the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Send me your questions on Twitter. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. Our first question comes from Heath Brooks, and it's, John, how good can Arkansas be this year in the SEC? Look, Eric Musselman is a world-class coach. I don't know who he has that's going to be able to get a rebound, but I do think Arkansas, with the backcourt it's put together, with Jimmy Witt, the grad transfer from SMU, with Mason Jones, with Jalen Harris, with Isaiah Joe, with Desi Sills, has a chance to be one of the more complete backcourts in the SEC. I don't put anything past Eric Musselman as a coach. He's going to a higher level, but I think Arkansas will be very competitive. It wouldn't shock me if they're right there in the NCAA tournament mix. Our next question comes from Eric Cofield, and it's, John, what's your projection for Temple this year under first-year head coach Aaron McKee? I see Temple right now as a capable middle-of-the-pack team in the American Conference, Quentin Rose an all-league player, and I like the pieces they have on the backcourt. I saw him practice already. Nate Pierre-Louis and his brother, Josh Pierre-Louis, will be a menace defensively. Josh Pierre-Louis, I think, has a chance to be one of the better freshman defensive guards in the country. That perimeter is solid. I think Temple has a chance, you know, with other teams like Cincinnati, Wichita State, UConn, SMU, to compete with Memphis and Houston at the top of that conference. So good things coming right there, I think, in the middle of that American Conference, which I think has a chance again to get four teams in the NCAA tournament. It's time now for Five Good Nuggets, and it's sponsored by our friends at Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. And now, let's get to some nuggets.
Five Good Nuggets.
Five.
Six.
No, five. But you were close.
Nugget number one, Eye of the Tiger. According to UCLA head coach Mick Cronin, Tiger Campbell has been fully cleared for all basketball-related activities. This was the point guard who tore his ACL a year ago. From speaking to people in UCLA's program, they felt that Campbell is the type of table-setting point guard that could have made a major difference last year for the Bruins under Steve Alford. I'll see the Bruins in a couple of weeks in Southern California, and I'll report back. But this is a big deal for UCLA in year one under Mick Cronin. Nugget number two, Rocket Man. At Michigan State last week, watching Rocket Watts, the freshman guard for the Spartans, told me that he will add a completely different dynamic to Michigan State because of how he can pressure the ball defensively. He'll be a nuisance for opposing point guards to deal with. Nugget number three, addition by subtraction. Baylor last week lost Mario Kegler, who's leaving the program to pursue professional opportunities. Prior to that, he was suspended indefinitely. This could be addition by subtraction for Baylor. They had too many guys, in my opinion, who needed major minutes. Now, all of a sudden, Mark Vital can log the bulk of the minutes at power forward. Baylor's got great perimeter players. They sat out two last year. Maceo Teague, a quality transfer from UNC Asheville, and also Davion Mitchell, who was part of that Auburn team that won the SEC 2 years ago. Nugget number four, bringing down the house. I referenced this earlier. Jalen House, the son of former Arizona State and NBA guard Eddie House, was a standout at Sun Devils practice on Saturday in Tempe, like a cheetah in the open floor. Bobby Hurley's club will have great team speed with House, with Remy Martin, with Rob Edwards. Could be a team similar to the team 2 years ago Hurley took to the NCAA tournament that can play really small and really fast. Nugget number five, on the road again. I'm headed to the South this week, checking out South Alabama. Could be one of the sleeper mid-majors in college basketball. I'll also see Alabama, UAB, and Central Arkansas. We'd like to thank Virginia head coach Tony Bennett for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. I'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel, about 5 weeks away from the start of the 1920 college basketball season. This is the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.